I'll call this hearing of the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability to order, and would ask the clerk to call the roll.
Okay.
Representative Belloc?
Here.
Senator Brady? Senator Frerichs?
Here.
Representative McCarthy? Senator Murphy? Representative Myers?
Here.
Representative Nekritz?
Yes.
Representative Poe?
Here.
Representative Riddick? Senator Schoenberg?
Present.
Senator Severson? Senator Trotter?
Here.
Thank you. For those of you who are present, thank you for coming up, and please add Representative McCarthy to the roll. So, thank you for coming up to this particular hearing, the first of its kind in the state of Illinois, and we're anxious to hear those from Eastern Illinois present their case. And at this time, I'll turn it over to Co-Chair Schoenberg, see if he has any comments.
Thank you. For the record, this is, as Co-Chair Myers indicated, the first hearing of its kind based on the changes that were made for Public Act 96-15, which took effect June 22nd of 2009. Certificates of participation, in which there was formerly a prohibition against using them. We have reinstated that under narrowly tailored circumstances as defined by this State University Certificates of Participation Act. It's part of the process by which state universities can use certificates of participation for financing capital improvements, requires a hearing and a recommendation by this commission. So having said all that, if there are no questions from members on the panel, we'll turn it right over to the folks from Eastern Illinois University, led by Paul McGann. Oh, yes, Representative Nekritz, for the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So why were they prohibited from issuing these kinds of bonds in the past, and why do you think this particular moment in time to change that so the contract had those responsibilities?
Well, Representative Nekritz, as you may recall from your prior employment,
obviously I don't.
As a result, to settle a subsequent. You may recall that in the 1990s, there was a lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of certificates of participation. I was actually the lead plaintiff in that. And I recall you were my legislator at the time. So the certificates of participation are, there was a lease purchase agreement that was executed. Several House members had a constitutional challenge to that in the courts, questioning whether or not the state, whether or not this constituted a debt of the state, because these lease purchase arrangements for certificates of participation, there was a question as to whether or not the legislature had to approve the expenditures for that, and in addition, whether or not it was truly a debt of the state. The question certainly emerged again as there was a lack of a capital bill as to whether or not we should perhaps reinstate this only under very narrowly tailored circumstances. Certificates of participation require our financing mechanism, which also require purchasing insurance, which inherently adds to the cost of them. So because universities had some time-sensitive capital projects that they needed to execute, they asked for some relief in the law. And we wanted to make certain that if we were providing a mechanism to give relief in in the law under very narrow, specific circumstances that there would be sufficient oversight and accountability for it. So not only did we ascertain in the law that certificates of participation would be count towards the contingent debt that it constitute a debt of the state, but as part of the legislative oversight for it, we require public universities to come before us and explain why they should have approval to do this project. We in turn have three options available. We can either recommend with concerns, or non-support of issuance. And then after we've had this hearing, we have 15 days to report what the findings will be. If we find that there is not sufficient grounds to provide even qualified support for this, if we vote on non-support of issuance, a university can't proceed with the issuance of the certificate of participation unless they appeal through a joint resolution of the General Assembly. Okay?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair. On that point,
Senator Trotter.
On that point, you said that this came up as a consequence of us not having a capital bill. We do have a capital bill, so what is the urgency of doing having this action now?
Well, I think that the people who will seek to finance projects through certificates of participation will provide us with the answers to why they feel that they need to use this financing mechanism as opposed to accessing general obligation bonds. Okay. If we could add Senator Murphy to the roll. If there are no further questions, please proceed.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Representative Myers and Senator Schaumburg and committee members for interrupting your vacation. We appreciate the consideration. And commission members, we thank you for the visit to campus and listening to our story. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about what our project is. It's the Renewable Energy Center and other miscellaneous projects. You have some of that information in front of you. Hopefully I'm going to have it on the screen too, in case you want to follow along. Back about 7 or 8 years ago, Eastern Illinois University ran into some problems with their steam plant. It is coal-fired and with a natural gas backup. And one of the problems that we ran into, excuse me, and I'll bring this down just a little bit. One of the problems that we ran into was that the pollution control equipment that was purchased by the state back in the middle 80s, early 90s, was not sufficient to handle the pollution that we were generating from the plant. And we ended up with a cease and desist order from the Illinois EPA on the amount of pollutants that we were putting out from that plant. That started our original look for a solution. We originally thought that we would start looking back at the coal board's solution to replace what we currently do. What we found out was that there was no interest in that, either from the legislative area, from the governor, from the coal board. Nobody would support that kind of commitment. The other problem was that the overall project was going to be $110 million to get a coal plant in operation. So we started looking around for other alternatives to move forward. One of the things that the campus, as well as the president of the university, has stated is that we want to be green. And so we started looking at the various alternatives. excuse me. And when we started looking at the current plant, it was built in about 1920. This is refractory. It's fallen off the walls of the boilers, and it's just falling down on the ground of the boilers. This is what one of our new boilers looks like. That is a 1950 version of a coal boiler. The boilers are operating only at about a 60 to 70% capacity right now because the tubes in the furnaces, in the boilers, are so, tube walls are so thin that we can't operate it at a higher level. Over a period of time, we just came to the conclusion that we had to replace this. Doing $16 million worth of remodeling was not going to be sufficient. The other thing is that if any of you have been to the Eastern Campus, this facility is in the middle of our academic area. And so we looked at it as being a dangerous facility. The pollution control had hydrochloric acid involved in it, and we were afraid if there was a catastrophic event that we would be putting our students and our faculty in danger. So we started looking for options. One of the things that we started looking at, and I know this isn't very clear, it may be clearer on your copy, is we were looking at the ability of other processes to lend a hand in our overall generation. And what we found was the biomass area lent itself very well to production within in our area, in the steam area. Most of the other things were not nearly as high, but the biomass area really showed us something. There was a lot of wood waste in the area. What we did was we started looking around and looking at what we could do with the way of a renewable energy center. Our renewable energy center would burn biomass as the fuel of choice. The fuel of choice would be 2-inch wood chips. And then we would have a natural gas fired backup, so very similar to what we currently have. And then the tertiary backup would be diesel fuel. We currently own about 40 acres of ground on the east, far southeast side of campus, which is currently in beans. And we would propose putting that renewable energy center down in that area. Now, the campus is up here. It'd be right along Eleanor Route 30. Down here is Edgar Drive. We've had a number of meetings with the neighbors. And they made some suggestions of how we might be able to get the traffic in. And they asked us if we would bring in the traffic on Edgar Drive and up this drive rather than turning off of 130. They felt that that was more appropriate. We listened. We made a number of changes due to the neighborhoods. Let me just back up a second. There are some neighbors over here, residential neighbors in this area. There's also residential neighbors up across another field on the north side. So we do have neighbors that have some concern about this. What we came up with was a renewable energy center that looks something like this. We think that it is fairly attractive, that it would fit along with the rest of the architecture of the campus. This is a view from the north elevation. We have on this north side some employee parking, some visitor parking, and we have a small office complex for the folks that are working there. The overall plant would have a couple of silos in the back. Those silos would not be taller than the height of the building, so that from the street, there would be limited exposure to the mechanical processes of this plant. Here's the road coming in from the south. They dump, the trucks would dump, we are expecting about 5 trucks per day. They would dump in this area, and this apparatus here, an elevator would then load the silos, which would then be gravity fed and allow the furnace, the boilers to work. Right here is the diesel fuel. It's blocked from view by this brick wall. The process is a fairly simple one, and I want to equate it somewhat to a wood stove that you might have in a log cabin. It's a little bit bigger, but still works on very much the same principle. The wood chips are stored in a hopper. They're augered into the gasifier. This is a wood gasification system. This furnace burns at a total of about 1,350 degrees, which just evaporates the wood chips. Out of a ton of wood chips, we get about a pound of potash that is about as pure as you can get and could be sold to the farmers in the area. We'll use about 30,000 tons of wood chips per year. Then it goes in, as the wood chips are gasified, they are ignited into the boiler, and the flame heats the fueling tubes, which then allows admissions and provides steam to the campus. As part of this overall project, we felt like we didn't want to waste anything. We have also put a turbine into this facility to generate about 7% of our electrical needs. The one boiler, one biomass boiler, would generate about 94% of our normal campus needs. But as we look forward, we know we have growth coming, potential science building, several other things that might be happening. Want to provide some backup to some secondary systems around campus. So we are looking at providing more than 100% of our needs with this facility. The burning process is very simplistic, very clean, and we've got significant support from environmental groups on this project. There basically is no need for then pollution control equipment in this process.
Can you tell us where you're going to get the wood chips?
Yes, they'd be coming from the southeast corner of Illinois, down Paris, Terre Haute, Indiana area. There was a large paper mill in the Terre Haute area that was deriving most of its byproduct that it used to make the paper from the southeastern Illinois area, and that market has never been captured by any other manufacturer in that area.
It closed down.
A couple years ago.
Yeah, are they free?
Pretty close. The cost of the wood chips is a little bit more than what we'd be paying for Illinois coal. Right now, because of the EPA restrictions, we're buying Indiana coal at 2 to 3 times the cost of the Illinois coal.
So with the plant closing down the paper mill, is this a sustainable source of wood chips? Where are you going to get them for the next 20, 30 years?
Our research shows that there is plenty of wood chips available. However, our ultimate desire would be to go to some agricultural product that citizens of the state would produce, something like miscanthus, which is a grass that grows about 11 to 12 feet per year. And we could do a silage chopper with that grass, store it out on the farmer's fields, and then bring it in to burn in our biomass boiler. So in the long run, we think we've got a better way of doing it than wood chips. But in the short term, how we're licensing this with the EPA is through the biomass and wood chips process.
What would be the tentative cost for the retrofitting this operation from a wood chip to grass?
There would not be any. The process that we have got planned for all of this will allow us to burn basically anything that'll burn as long as we can put it in 2x2 chips. Okay. Our air emissions go down significantly. The yellow is what we're currently permitted to do. It's not what we do because of the EPA, but it is what we're permitted to do. The particulates go down to almost nothing. Sulfur dioxide goes down to almost nothing. Nitrogen oxide stays up fairly high, but it's still a very small portion of the pollutants that we emit. HAF stays about the same. And then the one that we're all hearing about is the carbon dioxide. Excuse me. It is part of the chemical process that's released. I'm not sure exactly what that is. I can get you a specific answer on that. But the CO2 is way, way down. And that is one reason why we like this project and why the Sierra Club and other environmental groups have been so supportive of us in this process. How we do this, and I know that this is a significant issue for all of us, the current cost of utilities at Eastern follows this maroon line. And we anticipate right about here is where we are currently. In the last couple of years, we've seen significant increases in our utility costs, whether they be natural gas or coal. Water has also gone up significantly, but that doesn't enter into this as much. And so what we do is we are projecting then, this is where we're currently at, we're projecting a 3.5 to 5% increase over the rest of the life of the plant. And that increase then, when we implement the energy savings that we're talking about, both from the Renewable Energy Center and from the other energy conservation measures, will generate a cushion, a savings of electricity or utility costs. And we will take that then, and that's the purple or the blue on your sheets, I believe, and we will use that to pay the debt on our costs. The rest of the costs of where we're at now continue to be paid out to the utility, just as it would be for the rest of us in our everyday life and our business life.
So if there's an unpredictable event and the debt service, the savings, which are projected, don't meet your benchmark, who's going to stand behind that?
The university will, the school will. We have projected this out, and either through our savings from other debt issuance or from the COPS, we will have adequate coverage to pay on this debt. The other thing, and we've worked on this with the students, and we've tried to provide the citizens of the state of Illinois and the students a viable way to do this. And our promise has been that we're going to keep from asking the state for additional help. We're going to keep from asking our students for additional help. But in the event that everything goes south, what we're talking about is probably about a $20 per credit hour increase in tuition if we have to do it. We're trying to stay away from that. We think that this will work. It provides us with a fairly decent safety margin throughout our projection period. But you know, we're trying to work through all the various options that we have. When we asked Honeywell, and Honeywell is our partner in this, to guarantee the cost savings, and they are going to provide us with a guarantee of all the savings that they project will come about. We've asked for and received from them an insurance policy. Other than the guarantee, they're also going to provide us with a performance bond that this project will work as anticipated over a 20-year period. And that's 20 years from the date of implementation.
But the bond is longer than 20 years?
Yes, the bonds are longer than 20 years, and the reason why we did that was we wanted a little bit of additional margin in there to allow us a little bit more room for the payment on the debt.
For the first 20 years, Honeywell guarantees you'll have these savings. What if technology breaks down, market changes dramatically?
The project pays for itself in 20 years. We will generate enough savings in that first 20 years to cover the cost of the project, assuming everything goes right. If it doesn't, then we'll fall back onto the other funding mechanisms that we've got projected in this.
Other mechanisms, that's just from university in general?
Yes, we've got additional local funds. About 50% of this, 56% of this will be paid from local funds due to our revenue bonds and our auxiliary facility system. So we've got that money available to us. We are also pledging in the overall process, we are pledging fees and tuition for the issuance of the COPS.
You had mentioned some of the neighbors maybe had a little bit of a concern, but you're working with that. Certainly not universal. Are there any, who else doesn't like this idea, and what's their reason why?
We have not come across anybody else that had any problems. The neighbors were the sole concern, and I think through the work of our president and several others, we've been able to alleviate the fears of the neighbors.
And the borrowing, you feel like you've got enough in place between the partnership with Honeywell and your analysis of the costs and the benefits that even with the borrowing, that this will be a net savings in over this period of time?
Yes, sir.
For the university and the state sector?
Yes, sir. All of our projections show that this will work. We've been conservative in our analysis. We have not asked for 100% guarantee. So we've got some margin in here for error on our part for our calculations.
And just one final point or question. Paint for me the absolute worst case scenario. If we give the authorization to do this, and from that point forward, pretty much everything goes wrong. What is the worst case scenario for the university, the students, and Illinois taxpayers?
For the university, and I'll start there, the worst thing that could happen is that the utility prices go down, and that this increase does not continue. Even at that point, we save money on utilities, so it's not a total loss. But that is the worst possible scenario, is that the increase doesn't go up as much as what we anticipate. But then we're still going to generate savings from this overall project. From the standpoint of the students, the worst thing that could happen, it doesn't work, we don't have a viable method of heating the campus, and I think that's also the worst case scenario for the citizens of the state of Illinois. If we have a project, whether it be the current coal plant, the current steam plant, or this plant that doesn't function, this is a mission critical operation to us. And it's something that we have to find some way to replace.
Before we call on Representative Poe, I had a question to follow up. Is there an option available for you if the market conditions are more favorable? The state does another capital program where you would attempt to refinance the COP deal through GO bonds?
I suppose that we could. Right now, we're looking at interest rates of somewhere around 4.5%. Our council was telling me that we do not have the authority directly to do GO obligation.
So is it an option that's available for us if in fact the market rates are more favorable to do that down the road?
We are.
I guess the follow-up question to that is, you're planning on using the newly created Build America bonds, which were part of the stimulus, which are taxable bonds, but the federal government provides a subsidy towards the interest. Is there anything that would, by virtue of the creation of that financing animal, preclude the state from deciding later on to refinance if the market conditions were more favorable, or would we have to go the entire distance based on the fact of Build America bonds being used?
We have some of the same concerns, Senator, and what we've done is put in our preliminary model some call periods within those bonds so that in case something does happen with the Build America bonds or the market changes, that we are able to call those bonds and put something else out there.
But there's nothing in the Build America bonds that would preclude the state from coming in if it seemed to be more favorable to switch out the financing and have it be GO debt as opposed to COPs?
No.
You're saying that the state would issue debt and give the proceeds to Eastern to pay off early the Build America bonds?
Right, if in fact it proved to be more cost efficient.
Yes.
You know, by virtue of the fact that using the Build America bonds, you get that subsidy. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar enough with them to know whether or not you'd have to see the entire length of the financing through because you received the subsidy from the federal government.
No, you would not. You could advance refund those bonds.
So you could indeed advance refund Build America bonds?
Yes.
Without penalty?
The way we have it situated right now, there is no penalty.
Okay.
It would be 10 years of par, like what we're anticipating at this point. So if we got to the 10-year point, we could refund them immediately. If it was prior to 10 years, then we would be doing an advance refunding where the proceeds would be set aside until the call date.
And you would do that unless it was you cannot.
Right, but there'd be no penalty on the interest subsidy.
As long as the Build America bonds were outstanding, in other words, even though you had put aside this escrow, the federal government would continue to pay on those bonds if they were out on the market.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Paul.
Yeah, just two or three questions. The equipment you're buying, and there's a bunch of us been around a lot of equipment in our life, and I don't see any of those things lasting 20 years, first of all. So is there updates, and is bonding somewhere? Because your technology, you guys are having a hard time keeping up with it because it's going to change so rapidly. And then about your neighbors, I'm a little bit concerned about the noise levels. Is this a fairly quiet process? Is all those loads are going to come in 8 to 4, so we're not hauling semis banging up and down the road all night, some of those kind of things.
Okay. The second part, we have taken into consideration the neighbors' concerns. Trucks will only be coming in between 8 and 4 and 5 days a week. We're not planning on coming in on Saturday or Sunday. The process is somewhat of a mechanical process, and there will be some noise, but there is at least a couple of hundred feet to the neighbors on the east, and there's several more hundred feet, 300-400 feet to the neighbors on the north. So we're going to do some modeling to make sure that we're as quiet as we possibly can be and make sure that we meet those concerns of the neighbor.
And then that technology that's going to be out there 2 years from now, how do we keep up with that?
Part of the technology gains that we get will be invested back into the project as we go forward and identify additional things that can be done. We've been doing these types of projects on the campus of Eastern now for about 10, 15 years, and so we've done a lot of the energy savings measures that we can do. This is just another step in that process. and we will continue to upgrade and keep that current.
I guess let's talk more about the plant itself. There's ways, I guarantee, within 5 years, I think it'll be more efficient, and it'll be the day you open it. And is there, and when we're bonding, is there money in this so we can keep up with that technology, and that might be the company you're working with?
Yeah.
But you just can't, this thing's not, we can't sit here and think today that, that there's not a way that's going to be a lot more efficient 5-10 years from now than it is today. And my question is, how do we keep up with that?
We do have money within the project to do regular maintenance of the project. There is not money in the project to do those kinds of major adjustments to keep up with technology. We are just bringing it up to a level and going to maintain it.
On the same issue that we're talking about now, the commission did give us 5 findings that address some of these issues that he's now talking about. One is talking about that this roof is dead ceiling, dead service ceiling, owls at that ceiling, and that as a consequence of that, this may be the last project you'll be able to do in the next 30 years. So with that being known, is there any other things that you have on the table or you're willing to put all of your marbles in this one basket?
We are willing to put all of our marbles in one basket. This is such an important project to us. It is the project that we have to have in order to be operating on a regular basis. The other part of that is that there are two other phases, three other phases of energy conservation measures that we've done on the campus, and that some of those bonds do become due, and we did those through COPS. Some of those bonds come due in the next several years, through about 2015-2016. So as we get to that point in time, we will free up about $3 million worth of cap level for additional projects at that point.
Also, they mentioned here, just talking about our state's overall ratings that we have with Coors and with Moody's. And I saw something, I think, in Wall Street Journal on Friday that Illinois is now being lowered again now with Moody's, that we put on the watch list with tentatively. Illinois and Wisconsin, I think, were added to the states. So with that knowledge, knowing that the interest rates may be high, you still willing to put yourself at this this debt level?
Well, at about 4.5 to 4.6%, which is where the market is right now, it works. At about 5.5%, which is what our original projections were, it still works. Once it goes over that level, if we get up to about 6%, all bets are off. I mean, we're going to have to stop the project because it just does not cash flow at that level. And I'll ask Mr. Vincent to address the question about Moody's.
Is it correct that Moody's did put the state of Illinois on their watch list for possible downgrade? And this follows an actual downgrade by Moody's that occurred back in the late winter spring, when Moody's did lower the rating for the state to A1. At that time, Moody's did a review of all of the public universities and did a review of their underlying ratings. And at that time, we had our conference call with Moody's, and they felt at that time, back in May, that our financial strength and how the university has worked with their budgeting and maintaining positive operating margins and a safe level of liquidity, that this rating agency decided to maintain our rating at the A2 level with a stable outlook. Subsequent to that, Moody's again came out with a concern that the state could be downgraded if there wasn't a solution to their own capital difficulty.
Because of the inaction that we did not take.
And in fact, some of the other rating agencies, Fitch actually did act and lowered Fitch, another rating agency other than Moody's, lowered the state down to the A level, just the even A level, which is about where Eastern is right now, which is A2, the equivalent level of Moody's. Now, we went through a process just in the last month in anticipation of this financing where Moody's came in again and evaluated the specifics of this project. They knew it was coming, so they knew we had this debt load coming. But even with the large amount of debt that we're taking on for this critical project, and even with their concern with the state, they still gave us an A2 affirmation on our rating and a stable outlook. However, they did warn that if in fact the state did get downgraded, that they would revisit our rating level. So our hope is to move ahead and to get into the market and be able to market the bonds at the current level that Eastern Illinois is at with the A2 rating.
Representative McCarthy.
Thank you, Chairman. Sorry, is the chart you have up there right now, Mr. McCann?
Yes.
The payments to the utility company. Is the university the utility company right now? Or?
No, we are not. Right now, we produce steam. And to the extent that we buy coal and natural gas to fire that steam, they are the utility company. I mean, the coal that we buy or the natural gas that we buy from the utility and the electricity. Thank you. So we are
electricity
still
buying. You, buy that you can't produce that in your own facility.
That is correct. Okay,
and so the anticipation is that this fiscal year, you have about $9.4 million budgeted to purchase
between
electricity.
Yes, between utilities and the debt service on the previous energy conservation measures that we implemented.
Okay, well, the new facility, what percentage of the power needs of the university will be met by the new facility?
Of the steam, it will meet all of them. So it'll meet 100% of the steam needs. It'll meet about 7% of the electrical needs. And water needs, obviously, it doesn't do anything in that, but some of the other energy conservation measures work on that needs, try to reduce the usage of water on campus.
And the difference between what you pay them today, what you anticipate to pay them in the future, will be the savings that will be used for the debt service.
That is correct.
Okay. Now, you mentioned Honeywell a couple times. Were they chosen through an RFP process at the university?
Yes, they were.
Okay. Were they able to show you any other place in the country where they built a biomass?
We have looked at two or three other facilities. One is in Vermont. Another is at the University of South Carolina. Another is up in the University of Minnesota, Duluth.
Were they comparable size?
Yes, they were. All of them were.
As far as noise level or the production, it seemed to be going according to the plans that the projections that Honeywell made.
At least at a couple of the plants, they are in the middle of their campuses, so that the noise levels on those plants was at least reasonable for the academic environment that they were placed in.
And after, if the certificates of participation are issued, and you have the financing, what would be the construction cycle for a facility such as this?
Our construction period is roughly 2 years. If we get it, if we get some foundation laid by the time the winter comes this year, we will be ready by the third heating season.
Are there any costs that are estimated in the overall cost as far as the removal of the current facility?
No, there is not.
Representative Myers and I made a visit to your facility a couple of years ago. They sent the hostess, and it was pretty shocking, the generation facility we have now. And I mean, I'm not an expert on heating and air conditioning and steam production and all that, but it seems like there might be some things in there that are pretty costly to get rid of. Especially right in the middle of the university there.
Yes, the area behind the building is all the pollution control equipment. And as part of that, part of this project, all of that pollution control equipment will be removed once the new building is commissioned.
And there is an estimated cost that's involved in the overall?
Yes.
Cost of the construction of the new plant?
Now, the, yes, sir. The cost of remodeling the current building into something usable, that is not included at this point. And, but we will be removing the boilers and taking care of that process in this scope of this project.
Thank you for your answers.
Representative Bella.
Thank you. So, is the total cost of the this project, what is the total cost?
Let me go on my next slide, and I can just cover that very quickly for you.
Okay.
The total cost of the Renewable Energy Center is $56 million. We are so concerned that something's going to happen to our current steam plant that we are investing $2 million this right now into our old plant so that we have reliable steam for this next heating season. That boiler then can be moved to the new facility. So we're trying to do this in the most economical way we can. We've got other energy conservation measures, and I believe it's in your packet, of all the things that, additional things that we're doing with this, about $23 million. Then we've got the various costs of financing. A total project cost of about $87 million. We'll issue $86 million of debt, and we're putting in about $1.3 million of our own money to the project.
So there's actually going to be two of those biomass-fired steam boilers?
Yes.
And two natural gas-fired steam boilers?
That's correct. To give us the maximum capacity to hit at any level of demand on campus.
Thank you.
Other questions? Other testimony?
My financial advisor was just asking the question about the overall design of the facility. We're putting in two biomass fed boilers, two natural gas and diesel fired boilers, and that for a total of four boilers. And what that allows us to do is scale the production of steam to whatever our demand is. If we'd use a larger boiler for, say, biomass, yes, it would cover the ability for us to generate steam for the campus at any given time, but we can't scale it back and up and down. So at the two boilers, then it allows us to scale up and down the usage of those boilers to generate steam for the campus. Yes, also gives us some redundancy.
Any other questions of the commission members? Mr. McGann, do you have more testimony that you want to give, or do your, the others at the table have comments that they want to make?
I think we've covered the issues that we wanted to address. One of the gentlemen or ladies asked about why use this funding mechanism. Right now, we only have two options. We have revenue bonds, and we have COPS as a university. And this type of project is not conducive to a revenue bond type situation, not as conducive to a revenue bond situation. And so we were kind of, I don't want to say stuck, but I'm going to use that term, with the COPS mechanism.
Since none of the other commission members have questions, I do. You have listed, well, you've talked about the other energy conservation measures, and those are key to financing this project. Is that correct? Could you walk down the list of those other energy conservation measures that you have listed, and if possible, give a brief description of what those are and how you intend to save the money through those particular measures.
Okay. I'll skip over the combined heat and power facility. That's the renewable energy center. The gas-fired boiler and installation of the steam plant, that is the measure that I just talked about that we're putting into the old steam plant to give us reliability of steam for this coming heating season. And there is savings, but certainly not the kind of savings that you need in either of those projects to pay for something of this scope. Where we start getting into energy savings and true cost avoidance for us are in the 69 kV switch yard. That switch yard allows us to take the electrical source from the power company at a much higher voltage and therefore take it at a lower cost and feed it to campus through our own mechanism rather than bringing it in through a 12 kV line, which we have now. There is a need to, one of our residence halls is Carmen, and there is a need for greater power at that facility. And by taking some of that 69 kV to the site, we will save additional monies over and above what we're currently using because we're taking it at a higher level. There are some energy efficiencies in the transformers. Obviously, you're all familiar with the different types of retrofits we can do for lighting. That saves us a considerable amount. Somewhat the low-hanging fruit in the energy conservation measures. Occupancy sensors turns off lights when people are not in the room. Water retrofits primarily in the urinals instead of having the old-fashioned tank that runs all the time. We will use a sensor that will only flush after it's used and limit the amount of water. The window replacement is not a huge energy conservation measure, but it does qualify, and it is something that we need to do for the campus. We have a lot of students remarking that our windows are not very energy efficient. They're not. So we're replacing these. Our auxiliary facilities system is actually paying for the retrofit of those windows, and they're putting money into the project. Chilled water loop enters into our air conditioning process. The renewable energy center and the steam that we produce is used for four things. It's used for heating, cooling, cooking, and hot water. And you think, okay, steam used for hot water, but it's going to be used to run some turbines that can generate the cold air. Part of that is in the chilled water loop, and we're going to extend the chilled water loop that we put in under, I believe it was phase two of our energy conservation measures to make it more efficient. Pool ventilation is simply using some better design within our pool area to limit the amount of electricity and heating that we use there. Retro commissioning, we're going to look at some of the previous projects that we've done under phase one, phase two, and phase 2E to make sure that they're operating as intended and to bring them up to current standards. Building envelope sealing, the weather stripping, window sealing that we're all familiar with for our homes. We'll do it on a bigger scale. Heat recovery chillers, those are the heating chillers or heating mechanisms that are used in the large buildings. We're going to improve those. There's a number of energy conservation measures on here for the new Dabna Fine Arts Center that was just completed on campus that we've already found that there were some problems within the design phase, and so we're going to upgrade those to save us a significant amount of energy over a period of time. Let's see, There's university court retrofits. We're going to improve some of the toilets and sinks in those facilities to properly, or more better, not good, but better handle the water and the electricity that we use in those facilities. There's also the replacement in this overall project of another boiler in one of our residence halls that is nearing the end of its useful life, and we're going to replace that and replace it with the combined heat and energy center. Is that enough of a list?
Yeah, that's fine. But with regard to the Fine Arts Center and the efficiencies that you found in that so far, is that building complete yet?
It has not been signed off yet.
And so you're already finding problems with it. I guess one concern that I would have is that if you go forward with this combined heat and power facility, that before even it gets signed off on, you find problems with it. Hopefully you won't. But getting back to the Fine Arts Center again, was that a CDB project?
Yes, it was.
So do you think, did CDB not do their job? Or why are we doing this now before it's even signed off on?
Some of these projects were done to state of the art at the time that they began. Representative Poe's statement is exactly right. Things change over a period of time. We identified some water issues. We also identified some electrical issues within the Downa Fine Arts Center that were built to design at the point that they were implemented. But we've noticed that we can save considerable amounts of energy in those projects if we do some changing now. It'll be on our dime.
It'll be on your dime. You don't expect to sue the contractor or the
CDB.
They were done to specs at the time that.
Do you think CDB had the right specs?
I'm not an engineer. I hate to even say. I mean, obviously, when we go back in within a year and a half of implementation of the building, that there are some concerns there.
CDB is not involved in your new project of the combined heat and power facility, though. Is that correct?
That is correct, except that as part of the pilot program bill in Senate Bill 2009, we did agree to allow CDB to be involved. They're not leading the way. They're not directing, but they are supervising the process.
They're supervised by all processes.
Overseeing.
I would prefer monitor, but
that is correct. Right. So, okay. I'm sorry.
I'm not sure. But we're
that is the correct word.
I'd rather say we're monitoring than having some kind of supervisory role.
Yes, they are to monitor along with the procurement policy board.
Any other quick questions? Okay, seeing no other questions, seeing no other testimony.
I'll make the motion, let him word it for me.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. There are a number of contingencies that I think we all acknowledge with this transaction. Not the least of which is that there's not a specifically dedicated revenue source for the COPs, but rather utility and operational savings are going to be the principal way of paying for it. There are some other outstanding issues as well, which include the fact that the performance guarantee agreement with Honeywell begins in 2012, but there's going to be a gap. The guarantee is going to be for 20 years. The bond life is going to be 27 years. While that provides some added risk, I think you'll acknowledge that that's not a deal killer. The fact that, as Senator Trotter pointed out, that you come smack up against your debt service cap is another issue for consideration. So therefore, pursuant to 110 ILCS 73/15, I make a motion to recommend with concerns Eastern Illinois University's issuance of $85.865 million of Series 2009 A certificates of participation.
I'll say
it. Do we have a second?
Motion.
Motion and second to recommend it with concerns. Will Secretary call the roll?
Representative Bella?
Yes.
Senator Brady? Senator Farrick?
Yes.
Representative McCarthy?
Yes.
Senator Murphy?
Yes.
Representative Myers?
Yes.
Representative Nekritz?
Yes.
Representative Poe?
Yes.
Representative Rigg? Senator Schoenberg?
Yes.
Senator Severson? Senator Trotter?
Yes.
After you.
On a motion of 9 voting yes, 0 voting no, the motion to recommend with concern is approved, and you may go out and some response.
Just one quick comment. I really think they're ahead of the game, because if anything that any of us is looking at and watching, following the economy, we're talking about maybe going into an inflationary period. And if that happens, I mean, you guys are on the right side of this all the way. And this thing could actually be paid off a lot quicker if we have a serious inflation. And the money you're going to be saving, I think a lot of universities are really looking at this.
We will be looking forward to the results of your project, and hopefully other universities around the state will be able to benefit from your experience. Any other business to come before the Commission on Governmental Forecasting? Representative Bella?
Mechanically challenged.
There we go. I had a question on another matter.
Go ahead.
I just wondered if there had been any decision by the governor's office on the closure of how.
Seeing no further business left before the commission, the meeting stands adjourned.